And as we've been hearing, the White House task force is forecasting a best-case scenario of 100,000 to over 200,000 COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. if we take all necessary measures. The president said there will be millions of deaths if we don't. Well, one of those measures is simple. Wash your hands. You've heard it from your doctor, your boss, the governor, the president, your mother, and from Atul Gawande. 16 years ago, his research showed that simple signs in hospitals telling healthcare workers to wash their hands dramatically cut the rate of infections. Dr. Atul Gawande is now CEO of the new company Haven Health. They're trying to create better outcomes and lower healthcare costs. He's also a surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Massachusetts and chair of Lifebox, a nonprofit working to make surgery safer globally. We wanted his thoughts on COVID-19. Atul, Dr. Gawande, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, actually, I've been dying to know what you're thinking. So just right off the bat, what are you seeing that is giving you encouragement? What gives you the biggest concern? Start with the biggest concern.
I'm worried about what's emerged in multiple cities that go well beyond New York. We're talking New Orleans, Dallas, Atlanta, Detroit, Chicago, Philadelphia. Our death toll curve is worse than when China was at the same stage. 15 plus states with more than 1,500 cases. China only had one province. So again, this is a national epidemic, and we only have started treating it like it is a national epidemic in the last couple of days. I'm so glad the president reversed course and acknowledged that we're going to have to shelter in place to stay at home. But we have been late getting started, and that is worrisome.
Viruses don't know state borders.
They don't. And there is no part of the country where the virus is not spreading. Now, on the flip side, we are seeing that the playbook works. These key steps, staying home, physical distancing, the hand hygiene and cleaning that you talked about, it's only essential businesses that are open for the time being. And what we saw in China was that in Wuhan, about 4 weeks after they did the lockdown, the curve really flattened out.
Dr. Fauci is saying 100,000 to 200,000 would be great if we could keep the deaths to that. We're at 3,000 or more now. That would mean it would ratchet up to, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 a week.
It's frightening. And the range of what we see indicates that that's the curve we're on. You know, at the beginning of March, we had only like 100 cases. By March 26, we were at 100,000 cases. By April 3rd or so, we'll be at over 1 million cases. And it just goes compounding from there. The good news is we have started really at a national level, taking seriously our shelter in place thinking. And that allows that pace to slow down. Instead of every 3 days, it doubles every 5 days or 6 days. And that gives a chance for the hospitals to not get overwhelmed. And that helps them save more lives. You know, we are seeing the fever curve starting to turn the corner.
Okay, we'll talk about things that can be done. Because let's stay with hospitals, something you are, you know, so familiar with. You say that hospital workers need to be tested as they come in every day, screened for whether or not they have fevers. And it's not just because we need these workers to work with this very sick people. It's to keep them from being vectors.
That's right. In Italy, hospitals became a source of infection. That did not happen in Singapore, did not happen in Hong Kong, did not happen in South Korea. They had a playbook that worked. We can gear up and follow that playbook, and we've begun doing so. So what's in the playbook? You do need to check people when they come in the door. You don't have to test everybody, but you do need to ask people every day, do you have symptoms of a fever, a cough, a sore throat, muscle aches? It is an interesting question whether to ask people whether you have a loss of taste. There's lots of debate. There's some interesting anecdotes and cases that this may be an indicator also of COVID-19. And if you have these symptoms, don't come into the hospital. Go home and stay long enough to make sure that that has all gone away. Second, in Singapore, Hong Kong, et cetera, they have a surgical mask for all healthcare workers to wear when they come in the door. At my hospital, at the Brigham Women's Hospital, we made that our policy and then have, you know, fought hard to make sure we maintain supplies. There are lots of hospitals now that have also adopted this policy of a symptom check and surgical mask. And if supplies run short, we will give it first to the healthcare workers in the most critical areas like the emergency room.
You say you also, in a way, ration because you wear your mask all day. What's the best way to keep it clean?
Well, first of all, don't touch it. That's probably the number one thing. Part of the value of the mask is if you have the infection, it keeps you from coughing or infecting others. Second of all, it keeps you from touching your own mouth or nose or face. There are three or four methods that people are testing. You can use UV light. You can put it in the oven, 70 degrees Celsius, which does show that it kills the virus. Another approach is something called methylene blue that you can use regular operating room lights and soak it with this substance that allows the bacteria to get killed in the presence of light. Not ideal. You know, we need ordinary supplies.
You were on your list of what to do. I just want to jump in and ask one thing, because
you
say, you know, maybe it's not the smartest thing to do to quarantine everyone who may have come in contact or been in the vicinity of someone who has COVID-19 or test positive for the coronavirus. You know, only the people who what?
Well, so that's really interesting, right? Singapore, Hong Kong, quarantined only if you had more than 30 minutes exposure at less than 6 feet without a mask. And they had zero transmissions inside the hospitals. So that tells you something. It's from close, sustained contact with people and lack of hand hygiene after contact with secretions that is the cause of transmission. More and more, the policy that we're following, and it seems to be preventing healthcare transmissions, is that if you're exposed to someone, you have a mask, you get screened for whether you have symptoms, and if any symptoms appear, you make sure that you do not come into the hospital.
But if the symptoms don't appear, you don't have to sit home, and we don't have to lose as many healthcare workers as we're losing.
That's right. These measures we're testing out in the healthcare world, like wearing a mask and paying attention and tracking symptoms really carefully every day, might show us the way that we can all return to work while dealing with the fact that people without symptoms still can spread, but they're not as dangerous as the people with symptoms.
Yeah. Atul Gawande, you are speaking now probably to a lot of healthcare workers, nurses and doctors. What else do you want to tell healthcare workers?
I think a really important, powerful thing, which is happening in many places but is not universal yet, is you have to separate where the respiratory patients go from where the non-respiratory patients go. Separate wards, separate clinics, and separate teams, and putting them into a separate part of your medical facility is a important part of the playbook that has really worked. The final thing I'd have to say is that it's a scary time to be a healthcare worker and not know that the equipment you need is there, especially for clinicians who are, or any healthcare staff who are going to be around someone who is coughing or you need to put a breathing tube in them and be exposed to the possibility that the virus is being put out into the air. And I think it's a heroic effort. There is no question that we're putting ourselves at risk when we're going out there and don't know that we are going to have all the equipment we have. Some are having to make choices like, in my hospital, if the equipment's not there, sometimes, you know, an anesthesiologist will say, well, I don't feel we can put a patient to sleep. And I think every healthcare worker is making a choice for themselves about the risk they're willing to take. And it's appropriate, and it's understandably a difficult time for all of us.
Well, and what do you say to, the civilians? There's not yet a sense in every pocket of the country that this is their story, too. You know, what do you say to the person who says, I live in Montana, you know, my neighbor's, 10 miles away?
Or if you're in a rural area and your neighbor's 10 miles away, you're socially distancing and you're doing great. By the time you see it in your neighborhood, the virus is already out of control. So you are unfortunately having to act ahead of when you see your neighbors and your town is getting hit, because in a week or less, it's going to be. Ohio is a very interesting place. It was the first state where they shut the restaurants and bars. They asked people to shelter in place. And Ohio did it well ahead of the curve. There was a lot of anger directed at the governor for doing this. And the result is it's one of the places where the projections look like they will not overrun the hospitals. They will peak in mid-April, and they will come out the other side without having, you know, endangered the healthcare system and the people who need to rely on it. That is the choice in front of those parts of the country where this won't peak until early May. And acting now is your chance to avoid that overrun. It is a dangerous virus. And an example of that is that a quarter of people aged 45, will be hospitalized with this virus in order to survive. And about 5 to 10% of them ended up needing ICU care. They have to be on a ventilator for days in order to survive. Yes, their death rate is low, but it's only low because you have a functioning healthcare system where they can rescue you. And it's an ordeal for that for those folks who get that sick.
Yeah. So a dangerous virus. That's Atul Gawande, CEO now of Haven Health, but also a longtime surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and chair of Lifebox, a not-for-profit that aims to make surgery safer globally, but also a longtime observer of how to make healthcare safer. And certainly his mandate, wash your hands, is one that we're listening to now. Dr. Gawande, thanks so much, and best of luck to you as you work in this.
Thank you.
And I just can't believe that I'm asking in an interview in 2020 how to wash and reuse a face mask.